Hello and welcome to the Bankwatch podcast. I am Michaela Kozminová, comms officer at Bankwatch. In today's episode, we will discuss the need for effective EU financing for biodiversity. I am joined by two experts on the topic, Katerina Rakovska, Bankwatch biodiversity officer from Bulgaria, and Thomas Freisinger, EU policy officer at Euronature. They are also the co-authors of a recently published report, Biodiversity on the Brink, which specifically looks into what's holding back the financing for nature in the EU. Hi, Thomas and Katerina.
Hello.
Hello.
So providing sufficient funding for nature restoration and conservation is key to tackle the biodiversity crisis. The recent COP15, or the Conference of the Parties to the UN Convention on Biological Diversity, called for a drastic increase in global biodiversity financing and agreed to mobilize $200 billion per year by 2030. What's the current situation with EU financing for biodiversity, and what role do EU funds play in tackling the biodiversity crisis? Why are they so important?
Thank you, Misha. Thank you for having me. I will have to start with bad news. We're clearly not there, and the amount of money we have to address this crisis does not live up to the needs, for sure. If we look at the EU level, we have a certain amount of funding that is at our disposal to try to tackle this issue. We need around 300 billion euros until 2030. We are currently at 150, so the mathematics are quite easy to make. And this money is to be used for biodiversity conservation and restoration. The problem today is that those numbers are quite inflated. What does that mean? That there is a few actions that account into those 150 currently being used that we don't agree on. So that those projects are leading to greenwashing. They're not inherently having any positive effects on the conservation status of a species or of an ecosystem, a habitat, for example. And therefore, we have two problems. We have a problem of the amount of money and of the efficiency of that money. So the money we have is badly used, and the amount is not enough. So we have two big challenges that we have to tackle. Now, if we speak about biodiversity financing, it's a very tricky topic, because you're bringing together two topics that people don't like to see together. Nevertheless, in the current world, let's say in the current society, we have to talk about money. And in a world of very limited public resources, you have to make very hard choices between social choices, et cetera, et cetera. The issue today is that we have a crisis that is putting our society at risk, that is putting humanity on Earth at risk, and therefore we have to tackle it. This is why it's such an important topic, and this is why EU funds are a key factor here. EU funds are really at the forefront for biodiversity financing. They represent the biggest part of public money available to tackle this crisis. And this is why in this NGO coalition, we chose to really work on this topic and to try to bring together facts from member states together to have a systematic approach to the topic.
You analyzed these issues in a recently published report called Biodiversity on the Brink, What's Holding Back the Financing for Nature in the EU. So the world leaders seem to agree that more financing is needed for biodiversity. What is holding us back?
I would invite everyone to have a read of this publication. We identified a whole series of justifications, but maybe let's go back to three very important ones that we can talk about today. First of all, the pervasive lack of expertise and knowledge about biodiversity and in relation to financing of biodiversity funding. It is very difficult for decision makers to identify what the needs are, how do we measure it, what do we get from it, where do we get the data for it. And so if you ask the question of what biodiversity is, maybe people might be able to respond quite accurately. But if you ask them to really understand and rightly value, for example, the effect of pollinators loss for crops and food security, then we have an issue. And there is a disconnection, and that's why we have dealt with this as a knowledge gap. There is a huge problem in understanding the concrete effects of what is currently happening and of non-action. Then there is obviously the lack of time and resources, as well as capacity. The key actors of nature conservation restoration still are civil society organizations, and they represent a very small sector if you compare that to the huge challenge that they are facing. So we're talking about one of the biggest challenges humanity has faced here. And you have a very small sector, which is overworked, which has a lack of capacity, and that is mandated somehow to deal with that issue. So there's a different type of approach that is really required here. And then the third reason that I would like to bring up today is the funding conditions. So if you want to access funding for those kind of projects, it is very difficult once from an administrative point of view, but also from a pre-financing or co-financing point of view. If you know that you need 10 people to get a project validated for 25,000 euros, how do you get the bigger projects? How do you create capacity that allows those organizations to access more funding? Those are three of those key justifications. But as I said, there's a few more.
Thanks, Thomas. These conclusions were based on the research in the frame of Bankwatch and Euronature's pilot project, which was running over the past 2 years, where campaigners from Croatia, Latvia, Slovenia, and Bulgaria organized roundtables with other environmental organizations and national decision makers. Katerina, were decision makers open to discussing the issues of lack of funding for biodiversity, and were these stakeholders able to reach a consensus?
Creating the right atmosphere for people from different administrations, for them to get together with NGOs and discuss openly was a challenge, really. And convincing them that we want to do something together and not against each other. Overall, we managed to organize the discussions, and there was an open discussion. And with some people, there was some skepticism, but with others, were grateful for the provided setup. That we provided setup for conversation, because there usually doesn't exist.
So after analyzing this issue intensively for 2 years, do you have any recommendations that you would like to give to improve the situation?
We found out that there are things to be done on EU level, but also national level. Of course, the EU level can help the national level. One of the things that came up also on the NGO roundtables was the need to eliminate the harmful subsidies. You know, this is an issue mentioned in the Biodiversity Strategy 2030, but also in the global framework of the Convention on Biodiversity. This is necessary because no matter how much money you invest into restoring new Suisling colonies, for example, if you subsidize the converting of pastures into arable land, which destroy even bigger Suisling colonies, this makes no sense money-wise. So we believe that this is one of the first things to be done on EU level. Also, another advice that the EU level can give to the national level is the support for the people and organizations implementing biodiversity project with co-financing and pre-financing. What do we mean by that? For example, you know that LIFE program is the largest dedicated fund for environment and nature. And there are countries like Bulgaria where the needed quite high rate of co-financing is not supported by the government or by anybody. This refers to NGOs, but also to park administrations. They don't get any of the support. We also recommend member states to have national biodiversity strategies with action plans for implementation of biodiversity measures. This can help set up the necessary actions and also cost them so that you know how much money you need to provide. What's also necessary for the national level is to try and provide the flexibility needed for some of the biodiversity projects. So what do we mean by flexibility? Nature can be dynamic, And sometimes when we have a project approved that was written 1 year ago, for example, and the situation today might have changed, project beneficiaries need to have the flexibility to modify the actions, sometimes even the site. And this might be really, really necessary. For example, the live projects do have this flexibility, of course, when it is justified, but with some of the national programs, we don't have that. Another recommendation is that we need to raise the cooperation between the different administrations. During the roundtables with decision makers, we found out that, for example, the environmental ministry experts don't have the information that the agricultural ministry experts have, and they cannot benefit from the tools that one of the ministry has. We bumped into a case like that in Bulgaria. There's used by the different administrations. What also helps is the credibility in society about how this money is spent. And in order to have the credibility, we need to ensure that there is transparency of the results. I will bring up again the example with the LIFE program, where project beneficiaries are obliged to upload and describe the results of their projects on their website. It sounds very simple, sort of evident, but it's, for example, for the Bulgarian Environment Program, there's no obligation for project beneficiaries to list the results. And with biodiversity, planned actions and achieved results are not always the same.
Now back to Thomas. You have been monitoring biodiversity spending in Central and Eastern European countries, namely in Croatia, Latvia, Slovenia, Bulgaria, and some others. Is the situation similar in all these countries? Are there similar trends?
Most of them are. There is obviously also some differences, but it is quite striking how similar those justifications and those reasons are. So the bottleneck identification was in the end quite easy because we all agreed on them quite quickly. For sure, those trends and those justifications help us to understand what is happening. And they also show that there is decades of inaction and of lack of preparation on the national side for administrations who haven't prepared, who haven't built up the knowledge and the infrastructure that would allow bigger projects to happen in a more efficient way, and therefore also to absorb those EU funds better. For sure, you can always compare with Western European countries, and I tend to think that those are similar as well, and that helps us to develop some recommendations that are on a systematic level and not on a national level only. We have to deal with the EU as the EU, and therefore the whole set of rules that exist for EU funds and how they are administrated and how we deal with nature conservation restoration need to be dealt at a higher level. We're talking about a system level and not just a country-specific level. And what the alliance we have here with national NGOs, with EU-based NGOs, is really helpful because that allows us to tackle those issues on all different levels.
A last question. Are there any other solutions and any other recommendations for other stakeholders or other actors who can do what to improve the situation with biodiversity financing?
Well, except for the things that we already mentioned, I think that people who implement biodiversity projects can help with convincing people and society that investing in biodiversity is something important. And it also contributes to investing in people's own well-being. There are many examples where biodiversity projects can help people. Like, for example, if we have a project to improve river connectivity and remove obsolete river barriers, this can help, for example, recreational activities on the river, like rafting, for example. It's also good to convince society that biodiversity projects also have synergies with other sectors. And this is a good way forward to use available funds more efficiently. If we establish water retention areas on agricultural lands along the rivers, they can help reduce the risk of floods, but also they can create temporary ponds, which are good for biodiversity. This is very, very good. It's a very good example for synergies that is good for reducing risks and for biodiversity protection. And I will give another example also with restoring riverine forest that has multiple benefits, both for biodiversity in terms of eco corridors, but also for overall protection of the ecosystem and also the settlements built down the river, like erosion control, retention of pollutants, etc., etc. It's also good for the biodiversity project beneficiaries to highlight cooperation between stakeholders and how we can work together. For example, in Bulgaria, there's a very good example of cooperation between NGOs and the forestry agency, which a while ago managed to protect the old growth forests in the country. I think I can give more examples, but also Tomov would like to add.
Maybe just to give another perspective, really at Brussels level, I think we need to create also images. We need to show what biodiversity is, how it works, what it constitutes, what are the benefits that it delivers, but not just the benefits, the needs. And that seems to be forgotten sometimes. And I would like to be a bit provocative, but sometimes I think you really have to remind people how the water cycle functions. This is something that people had in primary school. They tend to forget how that works and what a dam or an irrigation project actually does to this water cycle. And I think by getting more illustrations and by getting a higher level of knowledge, increasing that would be definitely very efficient for our European policies as well.
Well, maybe it's good to say that investing in biodiversity is investing in our web of life, because we depend on nature so much. We're part of nature. So shouldn't be seen as a luxury.
Thank you, Katarina and Thomas, for sharing your insights. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back with another BankWatch podcast episode next month.